The Cook County State's Attorney, Kim Fox, joins the show now, and I'm happy you're here, Kim. I don't know if you've noticed, there's a lot going on in the world and a lot to ask you about. Even the last past 24 hours have brought major news, and I want to get into it, but thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Anna. Glad to be here.
So one of the things that obviously made news, the mayor. Mayor spoke out over the last 24 hours, said a number of things that kind of pointed a finger at the court system, but I think it also involves your office, too. I don't know. Maybe you have the reaction I want to hear. But she said, let me just make sure people up to speed. And one of the things she said was she talked about the electronic monitoring system and repeat offenders. She says, I don't control electronic monitoring. If I did, the problem would be solved. This is madness. We're allowing really violent people back on the street with electronic bracelets and are going back on the street terrorizing law-abiding citizens. What'd you make of that?
Listen, I share the mayor's concern about violent crime in the city, and we've seen an uptick of violent crime in the last 18 months during this pandemic. And I know the mayor knows, but for the sake of your listeners, the chief judge's office controls electronic monitoring, and it's judges who determine who gets out on electronic monitoring, not prosecutors. I supported and am grateful that the legislation passed to end cash bail, where we saw people who were charged with violent offenses be able to pay their way out. And if you're a danger, there should be no condition that will allow you to get out, whether that's electronic monitoring or cash. So I understand her frustration, and just as a reminder, that judges put people on electronic monitoring, not prosecutors.
Do the prosecutors have any say in that when you're in court about whether or not that should be allowed?
No. So what we do is we go over the defendant's history, whether they have been arrested before, convicted before, had any warrants, because they have not shown up into court, and ask the judge to put conditions that the judge, based on all of that and the risk assessment, believes are appropriate. But ultimately, it is a judge who makes the determination of what is the appropriate conditions for a defendant.
Okay. I know that a lot of fingers have been pointed in your direction. You've heard the police superintendent, you've heard the mayor, you've heard several aldermen. Lots of folks are saying, you know, your office is partially responsible for this, right? They say that you're allowing repeat offenders, they're not paying a price, they're not facing consequences, and then they go back into communities and commit more crimes, and there are more innocent victims. How do you respond
to
that?
I mean, I think the lawyer in me requires me to talk about facts and evidence, right? And the fact is that state's attorneys, prosecutors don't set bail. They don't put people on electronic monitoring. What we do is we charge crimes and prosecute them in a court of law. As the mayor said yesterday, you know, the court system has been slowed for almost the last year plus because of the pandemic. I think what is incredibly frustrating is that we are in the midst of high crime shootings and homicides, the horrific death of a seven-year-old over the weekend. And what people want are answers and are really frustrated by this notion of finger pointing of, you know, it's this system or that. This only is solved when we work together, law enforcement, community, activists and advocates working together. But the reality is, like, when people confuse what the roles are, we can only prosecute people who are arrested. And so there's a role for police to play in terms of how we've been engaged. There's a role for the city to play. And so it's incredibly important that we don't get caught up in rhetoric. It's one of the things that I've been really mindful of, because when I talk to people who live in neighborhoods impacted by violence, they are tired of finger pointing. They want answers.
Sure, I think we all do. When it comes to the role everyone plays, though, I just want to be clear. Prosecutors don't set bail, but you make requests of a judge. And if you ask for a low one or no bond or bail, they
Correct.
Can grant that. And they will listen to you. They take that into account as they make their determinations.
Well, Anna, to be clear, we can say no bail, right? There are conditions that are set out by the Illinois Supreme Court in which right now, under the current bail system we have, where we can say that someone does not qualify for bond. And there are certain specific instances where that is the case. But most cases are not eligible for a no bond. So there's some other condition that a judge can impose. And it is the judge, based on all of the information, and we provide them the case history, any warrants, the facts of the current case. And it is a judge that makes that determination. And I do think it's incredibly important, because I keep talking about this issue, that we are fully informing your listeners of how the process works. And so the ultimate decision maker on whether someone has bail or not is the judge sitting in bail or a bond room on any given day? And our prosecutors are in there making the case on every case about defendants' histories and their risk assessment.
Yeah, and that's a tough thing to do. That is under intense scrutiny right now, as you do, you see some folks who are back on the streets and do commit more crimes. Do you agree that that happens, that occurs?
Oh, absolutely. We have seen it. And the system that we have right now is not perfect. It is one of the reasons that, again, we fought for bail reform, because the truth of the matter is that there are some people who are charged with violent offenses, but they have the resources to get out, and they pay their way out. I know we've used the example a lot of Kyle Rittenhouse in Wisconsin, who is charged with a double murder, who is out on bond. There are other people locally who are charged with violent offenses, but if they can pay $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, they can walk. And so we need a system in place, and we will in 2023, where if you are a risk to the public, if you are a threat to the public, there is no amount of money that you can pay or any other condition that would allow you to be free while you wait for trial.
Mm-hmm. On that subject, I got to ask you about Reuben Roman, 21-year-old who was with 13-year-old Adam Toledo when he was shot by police. He's just been bonded out, $40,000 bond by a bond fund. He was out on probation for a gun charge. Police say he's a known gang member. He was caught with a gun that night. What, 5-8 shots were fired that night? This is a guy who's now out in bond. What's the assessment of a guy like Reuben Roman? Do you agree with the community bond fund bailing him out?
You know, under the current system that we have, and again, why I'm advocating for no cash bond, it is based on one's ability to access cash, even if you're considered a threat. And the fact of the matter is that the Community Bond Fund put up the $40,000, which is not an insignificant amount, to have him released. And I think that is why the current bail system that we have right now that will allow for someone who is considered a threat to pay their way out is not working.
Should guys like him, though, be on the street? I think that would be the argument the mayor would make right now, is that we should look hard at folks like that. That the bail system is that the right thing? I mean, do you think pure and simple that's the right thing?
The bail system? I think the bail system
needs to change. Reuben Roman being on the street.
You know, I obviously we are prosecuting Mr. Roman at this time. A judge made an assessment and someone paid his bond. So I'm not going to go into the specifics of that, but reiterating that there are truly people who are a danger to the community, who have access to resources that allows them to go back into the community. And that's something that needs to be fixed. And I'm grateful for the governor's leadership in doing that.
Your prosecutor had made statements in court that all of us in the media were reporting in advance of the Toledo video being released. It turned out that those statements didn't accurately, I would say, represent what actually happened on that video. I just wonder, this was a high-profile case. Had you looked at the case that he was making prior to him going into court and making that, or is he kind of on an island on all this?
You know what? We're doing an internal investigation to see how that occurred. It's certainly something that is not acceptable to us. And as, you know, prosecutors and being the voice for the people of the state of Illinois and knowing that our words were going to be taken as fact, it's unacceptable what happened. So we're doing an active investigation and we'll be reporting out soon.
The other thing the mayor said I want to make sure I ask you about, Kim, is that she said don't test us. She was asked about potential looting as the Derek Chauvin verdict is scheduled to be. It's going to be announced at some point. We don't know when. It's up to a jury. Don't test us, she said. Don't test us. We're ready. We're prepared. We're ready to arrest you, to prosecute you, anyone who would dare try to take the dreams of our small businesses by looting. And I wonder, are you unified with her on that message?
Certainly, we're unified, and I want peace, regardless of what the results are. And just as we were last summer, as police brought us cases, and again, we can only prosecute cases in which arrests are made, to file charges where appropriate. As a reminder, of the cases that were brought to us related to summertime looting, we charged 90% of those cases, 90%. And those cases are making their way through the system now. I'm certainly grateful that there are less that have been learned as a result of the Inspector General's report around arrests and how those cases are being handled and brought to us, so that we certainly don't see a repeat of last summer.
And speaking of last summer, were the majority of those cases prosecuted? Were there a lot of arrests there? How can you sort of quantify that for us and tell us what what happened as a result now that we've had some months to sort of look into that.
Yeah, I think if you look at the report, there was concerns that even in the midst of all of that, there was an inadequate amount of resources to be able to facilitate arrests. So when arrests were made, those cases were brought to us and charges were filed in 90% of the cases. Even in the months afterwards, we worked on a task force with the Chicago Police Department to be able to help with identifying people who were caught on video or some other way to track folks down on social media, and we're making arrests well past the summer. And so, again, our hope, because we can only prosecute cases in which officers make an arrest, that the strategy that they are implementing, and I feel confident that they are from the lessons learned, will allow them to make arrests in a timely fashion.
We've run out of time here, and I just want to thank you for coming on my show, Kim. But finally, can I just ask you your thoughts as you think about the Derek Chauvin verdict, which we could hear at any point in this trial? I'm sure you've been watching it. You're a prosecutor. What are your thoughts, your perspective at this time?
You know, I watch it not just as a prosecutor, but as a Black woman who has felt very deeply the pain of so many in the Black community as a result of this trial and other horrific murders at the hand of law enforcement. And I hope that the jury had an opportunity to hear the facts, the evidence, and the law, and will render a just verdict, understanding that it won't bring Mr. Floyd back, but hoping that this is a moment of real reflection and change for a system that desperately needs it.
Hmm. Thank you, Kim. Thank you for the time, and thank you for agreeing to come on the show today. Really appreciate it.
Of course. Anna, of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox there. Gosh, so much more to ask, but we were out of time there. We are going to talk with Pat O'Brien. He actually ran against Kim Fox. Maybe he was listening. I don't know. He'll have thoughts, but he certainly has thoughts about some of the mayor's comments, which are making news at this hour. We'll ask him on the other side of this. Pat O'Brien joins the show now. Just a couple minutes left. Pat, I don't know if you have had a chance to listen at all to the Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox. I know you're a former judge, and you ran against her for state's attorney. You've been in the office yourself. You just sort of your response to things that are going on right now. You also heard the mayor talk about electronic monitoring, that sort of thing. You've given a lot of thought to this. What do you have to say?
Well, I didn't hear what the state's attorney Fox had recently said. I know that her office wasn't commenting beyond a statement, I guess, released on Thursday about what her assistant had said in the bond hearing with regard to Roman. But I'd say this, there is a balance that has to be struck between people that are charged with violent crime, where there's a finding of probable cause that they committed the crime, and safety of the community. And part of that balance is that there needs to be a restriction of liberty. Now, at this point in time, there still is an ability to cash bond. But I agree, cash bond does not necessarily determine whether a person is going to be a good risk to be free while their case is pending. And I'm in favor of a situation where there's sufficient, restrictions on the liberty of a person so that we're confident that they're not committing other crimes while they're waiting trial. And part of that has been the electronic monitoring. It isn't totally provided with GPS yet. That may or may not kind of assist in letting everyone know where a person is, but it's also the state's attorney's responsibility. They should have a unit that on a daily basis is checking with the sheriff's office to determine who's on electronic monitoring and has a violation from the last 24 hours. And where the violation is serious, it's got to be immediately brought before a judge to have a review on that situation that allows them to be on electronic monitoring.
I asked her about the Reuben Roman case, the 21-year-old who was with Adam Toledo, the 13-year-old who was shot by police after one of the men fired 8 shots. He was out on bond for a weapons charge, the 21-year-old was, Reuben Roman, and he just bonded out $40,000. Not a low bond, but yet he's out on the street. And I just wonder, is that the kind of person that would be, the kinds of rules you're suggesting need to sort of catch folks like that? Does he belong on the street?
My belief is if there's a probable cause hearing that's been held about the recent incident he was in, where supposedly he fired this gun, that's a violation of his earlier bond. So there is no way that a person who has, and I consider a shooting on the street a violent crime, who has that subsequent violation should be on bond either on that violation or on the earlier case. I think you're well within your rights to say, Ruben, you've had your chance. We put you on bond. We trusted you. You violated that trust. You're in custody until there's a disposition, period.
Yeah, I mean, she raised the point, and and I think it's a good one, especially with low-level crimes, is that it shouldn't be based on income, your ability to bond out. I think he falls into a different category in my mind, just that it seems as if violent acts like this in violation of your bond, your initial bond, put you in a different category, and that income shouldn't even play a role at that level. I just wonder, do the courts, is this typically how it's handled? All of us who don't get to sit in court all the time, guys like this, do they just go back? Is that what we should expect?
My answer is, at this point, until there is some position taken by the state's attorney, which when a judge gives a cash bond to a person who has violated an earlier bond, that should be appealed to the appellate court, because there is no reason why the appellate court can't change that bond order. And unless the state's attorney stands up and has a more forceful and, if you will, more consistent position, this is going to continue to happen. And it will continue to happen on a more significant basis with the new bond statute, which comes into play on January 1st of 2023. So we're in for a rougher ride down the road.
I know you've talked about that a lot. We're out of time here, Pat. And I just want to ask you, though, she did mention the roles the prosecutors play versus the courts play. And she says you don't set bail. My understanding is that you make requests for bail and that those are heavily weighted by a judge. You've had both roles. How does it work?
It works like this. To me, at least, it works like this, having been in all three roles, attorney for an accused, prosecutor on the bench. The prosecutor has the most dominant position in a courtroom and certainly in a bail hearing, where they have much more evidence and are dealing with more facts. Judges will not, on a regular basis, go against a prosecutor's position. And if they do, the appellate court, you can appeal right away. This is a situation where the state's attorney has to be more consistent and more aggressive in trying to keep all of us safe.
All right. We just learned, too, that Pat, that there has been a verdict in the Derek Chauvin officer case in Minneapolis. Will not be announced for another hour, we're told. A speedy verdict, wouldn't you say? Any quick comments on this? I'm totally out of time, but I just learned this news now.
Yeah, my comments would be, in this time period, I think the verdict favors the prosecution. Now, what the verdict is, given that they've got three different kinds of charges for homicide, I'm not going to speculate. But this time period, it favors the prosecution.
Thank you, Pat. Appreciate
your time.
Thank
you. Thank you to your listeners.